This episode is brought to you by Element, spelled L-M-N-T. What is Element? Let me tell you, it's a delicious, sugar-free, electrolyte drink mix. As a coach, we are constantly trying to find the best products for our athletes to train and compete at their highest level. Element is a great alternative to other commercial recovery and performance drinks and has enough sodium, potassium, and magnesium to get you feeling and performing your best. Plus, it has zero sugar, no artificial ingredients, and is gluten-free. With a variety of delicious flavors, you are guaranteed to find one your taste buds will love. I know our athletes love the citrus salt, while my favorite is grapefruit. We keep a variety box in the office, and our athletes stop by every day on their way to practice or games to load up. At this point, they won't even touch another product, and I am replenishing our supply on a weekly basis. Without amazing products and sponsors like Element, our podcast would not be possible. Right now, when you click on our affiliate link and place your first order, Element is giving us a 150% commission. That means if you spend $100, we get $150 to keep this podcast running. The best deal you can get is to buy an insider bundle. You buy three boxes, you get one free. And if you click our affiliate link, drinkelement.com/JustinClimo, we will get a commission and you will get a free sample pack with every purchase. Last thing, Element might have the best return policy on the planet. If you don't love it, you will be instantly refunded. Let's talk about sleep for a minute. I've had a terrible time getting productive rest and sleep for the last few years. And since poor sleep can lead to all sorts of health problems, I'm constantly on the hunt for a better night's sleep. Recently, I came across a new product called Beam Dream, which has delivered the best sleep I've had in a long time. The first time I tried it, I fell asleep on the couch within a half hour and didn't wake up until the next day. Since starting my new routine with Beam, my sleep performance has improved significantly according to both my Oura Ring and Whoop Band. Yes, I use both at once because why not have more data? If you are interested in upgrading your sleep, I invite you to try Beam Dream. Today, my listeners get a special discount on Beam's Dream Powder, their best-selling healthy hot cocoa for sleep with no added sugar. Now available in delicious seasonal flavors like cinnamon cacao, sea salt caramel, and white chocolate peppermint. Better sleep has never tasted better. A recent clinical study revealed that 93% of users wake up feeling more refreshed, and 93% reported that Dream helped them get a more restful night's sleep. If you're looking for a way to get some rest and you have trouble sleeping, I highly recommend this product. If you want to try Beam's best-selling Dream Powder, take advantage of their biggest sale of the year and get up to 50% off for a limited time. When you go to shopbeam.com/contacts, discount auto applied at checkout, no code is necessary. That's shopbeam.com/contacts for up to 50% off. If you're a longtime listener, you might know that I've been drinking AG1 for a couple of years. If you're not a longtime listener, then know that I drink AG1 on a daily basis. When I first started drinking it daily, I could feel a real difference in my daily health. I had more energy, I felt more relaxed, I could focus better. That's because AG1 is a foundational nutritional supplement that supports your body's universal needs, like gut optimization, stress management, and immune support. Since 2010, AG1 has led the future of foundational nutrition, continuously refining their formula to create a smarter and better way to elevate your baseline health. I recommend AG1 to all of my family and friends because it has worked so well for me. So much so that my two eldest children have become regular users of the product. My daughter, who has been studying abroad, recently asked us to bring her more product when we went to visit her at Thanksgiving. My other daughter, who's a freshman in college, regularly contacts us to make sure we send her more product. AG1 has been transformational as it has replaced all of the needless ramekins of vitamins and minerals that I used to take. If you really want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/contacts That's drinkag1.com/contacts to order your own supply and start on your journey to better health. Welcome to the Contacts Coaching Podcast, dedicated to bringing you practical ideas from coaches, sharing what they have learned throughout their career. The show is designed to serve as a digital database of mentorship from a wide network of coaches whose innovative, reflective, and diverse knowledge may offer ideas to enhance your experience. In addition to sport-specific expertise, each episode also dives into the ways in which culture, strategy, and tactics can cross from one discipline to another. I'm your host, Justin Klein. Welcome back to the Contacts Coaching Podcast. We are joined today by Rafael Sevilla, Director of Athletics at Modoc High School, which I had to look up on a map. It's in the top right corner of the state of California, damn near on the border of Oregon, Coach. Thanks for calling in. We're probably paying long distance charges on this one. Let's dive in here.
All right.
Usual opening. Tell us your story. What was the process like for landing where you are now? Getting the first job, background in coaching, background in athletics. How did we get here? Take us through the journey.
I was a collegiate athlete. I went to Shasta College in Reading, Butte College. I'm actually originally from Modoc, so this whole job that I have now is coming back home after a 20-year odyssey. I played college. I was going to try out at Chico State because that's where I got my BS from. And that's about the time my daughter, we're pregnant with my daughter, my oldest, and my dad, who is probably the biggest influence in my life, gave me that conversation. Hey, man, you've been chasing the soccer dream for a really long time. How's that going to pay for the baby? And life came through and I made a decision to stop. Didn't go to Chico tryouts, just kept going to school, waiting tables. It was a hard decision, but looking back on it, my dad was right. And I had to provide for my daughter, and he also told me that the game has a strange way of taking away and also giving back. And so when we talk about the journey into coaching, 5 years later, the game gave back because I was a youth rec coach for Reading Youth Soccer League in Reading, California. And my first team was that little baby who became Aaliyah, being a four-year-old U6, U4 soccer, where they don't keep score. And that was like mid-2013 and stuff like that. And I was applying to high schools in Reading, trying to get just, you know, I was doing my education. My whole process was simple. If I can get a coaching job, these people are going to be, they're going to get to experience me. And then I'm also eventually going to be like, hey, I'm a teacher too. Like, I'm going through school. And so I got a lot of no's, a lot of no interviews, especially in the area of high schools. Reading's 90,000 people, but it's still considerably a small town, especially with the three high schools there. Shasta High School in Reading sent me a letter telling me, hey man, you need more experience. I was like, all right, cool, man. I'll take that. And so that experience came with youth soccer and coached my daughter for 6-7 years and kept applying at high schools. And then finally, I got a JV coaching job at Enterprise High School in Reading and got brought on there, man. And still going through school, waiting tables, doing all kinds of stuff. My family had gotten bigger. By that time, I had my second daughter, Sophia, and living in Reading and just waiting tables, going to school, doing all kinds of stuff. And then that JV job came open, man. And it was cool because I finally got to coach at a bigger level and help the varsity coach and do all this stuff. And out of that came how I started my journey in track, because I'm a track coach too. And it was just wanting to stick around. Like I said, the plan was always to be a coach. And then when the time came, hey, y'all need a teacher? That was me. And got to Enterprise High School and coached there for 4 years, 2017. 18, 19, and then a little bit of 20 till COVID rocked everything, all while coaching youth soccer still for my daughter. And then through coaching at Enterprise High, the rival is Shasta High School. And one of the coaches there was also the director of coaching for North State Soccer, which is the comp league in Reading. And so he brought me on into North State Soccer, and I started dabbling and doing some training with travel ball kids in soccer. And I had the age group that my daughter was in, but I only had my daughter half the time because her mom actually lived in Alturas, and I was with my who's now my ex-wife in Reading, with my other daughter, Sophia. So it was doing a little bit of everything. And this whole time, man, I'm waiting tables still. The waiting tables journey was 14 years, which isn't bad, man. I feel like that helped me a lot in the things that I do, talking to parents and all that stuff. And coached at Enterprise for a couple of years, coached track there for a couple of years. And then COVID hit. And then I was blessed with twin girls. And they were born 12 weeks early back in 2019. As a matter of fact, they were born on a Saturday. And Monday, I was supposed to start coaching at Shasta College, which as a goalkeeper coach. And it was my first foray into collegiate athletics. And it was back at a school that I had gone to school at and played soccer for, but it was coaching women. And it was that same coach that I coached against in high school that brought me on. He was the head coach of Shasta College. And he actually, one of his players was one of the players that I had coached before. And he wanted to bring people in that they knew. And so one of my old players dropped me the best reference she possibly could. And he brought me on interview. And all of a sudden I was coaching at Shasta College. Meanwhile, still coaching at Enterprise, doing both. And still coaching youth soccer with my daughter. And so the twins came and I lived in Sacramento for 2 months because they were in the NICU for 2 months in Sacramento. And traveling back and forth, I transferred my waiting tables job from the restaurant Reading to the restaurant Sacramento. I lived at the Ronald McDonald House. So shout out to Ronald McDonald House because they provided an avenue for us to be there and take care of our kids while they were in the NICU. And then once the girls got home 2 months later, finally after leaving the NICU, like I said, the rumblings of COVID started happening. It crashed out our season at Enterprise. They killed the program at Shasta. Because it's community college, all these kids went home. Shasta actually lost their women's program there for a while. And it's just finally gotten back after a couple of years. And then I was home. My ex-wife at the time was working at a school. So I needed a job that I could have like a graveyard shift essentially. So I started working with my brother at Empire Recovery Center in Redding, California. He's the director there. And it's crazy because when I was younger, I struggled with drug addiction myself. And so I was always one of those drug users and abusers that said rehab is for quitters. And all of a sudden I was finding myself working at a rehab, brother. And there I was. And I was working from, this is typically my day was I'd wake up with the kids. I'd wake up with the kids and I'd stay with them and go to school from 7 in the morning till about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I'd go wait tables for a couple hours, clock out, go shower for 10 minutes, and then head to the recovery center to work graveyard shifts. Working with people that were going into drug detox. It was a residential. It's actually the only residential rehab north of Sacramento. And working there, and my brother's like, hey, what do you think about teaching a class? And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, just go in there and teach them whatever you want. So you want to be, right? Be a teacher? Yeah, go teach them. And he's like, just try to stay within the whole 12-step process. I was like, bro, that's going to be hard because I don't believe in that. And I do to a certain extent. I see what it does, but I'm just one of those people. Like, if you work hard at something, especially struggling with my own addiction, you got to find something that's going to keep you away from it. And got there, was doing that. And then finally, I was like, man, I got to do something with not waiting tables anymore. I always want to be a teacher. Called National University, asked them, what can I do to get there right away? I get there right away. And got there right away. They gave, you can have your master's and such and all this stuff. Selling me the world, which I took right away. But allowed me to get my work done as quickly as I possibly could. And I was doing that on those graveyard shifts. Went and took an interview. It's funny, man. Looking back, a counselor at Shasta told me that I was eventually going to get a teaching job somewhere on Fall River. He said that years before. It was like 2012. And sure enough, I took an interview at the Fall River Joint Unified School District, which is in Burney, which is east of Reading. And I went out there and I was interviewing for a counselor job. And then ended up also applying to the school I currently work at now. This was in 2020. And I thought that I was going to be able to get a job back home. And they never interviewed me. I was sour about that. Got over it. Put all my eggs in that basket. But I was sulking. And then the Fall River principal, Kelly Freeland Sloat, I'll shout her out because she took a chance on me. She called me and said I had no business being a counselor. And then she told me she was going to offer me a position in a subject that I did not go to school for. And that was teaching Spanish. And I took it. And it was weird because, like I said, coaching was the avenue into a teaching job. And then all of a sudden, there was no sports because of COVID. So I felt shortchanged there. But I put my energy into teaching and I love doing it. It's like my favorite thing to do. I learned a new subject, even though it is my first language. You got to teach it. And ironically enough, my mother told me that I always had to keep this language because I was eventually going to need it. And she still corrects me till this day, her 79-year-old heart, man. She still corrects me till this day. And I ended up taking that job, and we had that truncated spring season in 2021. We got a little bit of cross country, baseball, softball, track. And they offered me, they didn't offer me, they threw it on my desk essentially. It brought me into the office and said, "Hey, you want to be athletic director?" I'm like, "Sure." And off we went, man. And here we are 3 years later, living the dream.
There's a lot there, to say the least. And I got a page full of notes here, a lot of things I want to dive into. And I'm going to stay on brand here for this first one, because you are still somewhat, let's call it green, in this, right? So for those of you that don't know, Coach won the Norm McKenzie Award, which is the award given to rookie athletic directors, which is anywhere from 1 to 5 years. So got some recognition for his work right away, still doing it. But because you are a rookie, air quote, AD, what I'm always curious about, and I said this in the breakout session where I was like, people have not wanted to come on the pod because maybe they feel they're not ready or whatever. And I'm like, part of the whole reason we started this was to help people understand what they need to figure out right at the beginning. So you tell me, what are the things you needed to figure out right away when it was thrown on your desk and you were like, sure. But then all of a sudden it was like left jab, right cross, duck and cover.
They'll give you ample time, but at the same time, my situation was a little different. My admin, my principal, took a leave of absence literally like 2 weeks after she named me athletic director. So the entire 2021-22 school year, I was without an admin. So I essentially de facto became the budget admin, is what I called it, because the superintendent was supposed to come in and be the principal. He was just never there. And then our dean of students was elevated to a position where she had a lot on her plate too. So a lot of decisions, I sat in a workshop down in San Diego last week about what can an AD do for a principal and a principal do for an AD. And we spoke about how the principal has a final decision and everything. I didn't have a principal. And so that default went to me. So one of the things you really need to figure out right away, man, to answer your question, is what energy are you going to bring? And are you going to be able to make ultimate calls? Because sometimes, a lot of the time, the principal will default to you. What do you think? Okay, cool. And if they feel like your decision's good, you're going to roll with it and you're going to have to take those punches no matter what comes with it. And my first AD job was at Far River High School of about 140 kids. And we, the winning tradition there, pedigree, coaches coached mom, dad, and sister, and brother, and cousin, and uncle. And so I came into the dream situation. And that was a lot of just these kids ready to play coming out of COVID. I got the stud from the football team playing at Harvard right now. He's playing ball at Harvard, second string tight end, undersized kid. He was our stud quarterback. And so you just got to be ready to roll is the answer to that, man. If you love athletics, you just got to be ready to roll and be ready to take the criticism, because that's something that comes right away, I think.
I've been scrubbing my brain for the last 20 minutes while you've been talking after you made the initial comment about this. That's when we had our first daughter. Yeah. And I was listening to something, and I'm trying to remember what it was, but where the person being interviewed basically said, "Hey, you never feel ready for anything, but once you have a kid, like, you figure it out real quick." And similarly, in this role, you can do all the prep work you want, right? Like, I had probably the best preparation ever for my situation, just based on who I got to be mentored by. And you come from a completely different path, 14 years waiting tables, right? Working at a drug and alcohol recovery center, right? Trying to coach, it getting taken away. And you know what? Just go figure it out anyway. And so I think to that, I would love to hear you share some challenging situations that you had to figure it out that maybe you botched. And maybe that were successful, even though you had no idea what you were doing.
One prime example is probably the most difficult week of my life so far as an AD. Small school. The football coach came to me at the beginning of the year and said, "Hey, I want you to join the staff." Now, mind you, I'm not a football coach. Man, I love football, but I'm not an X's and O guy. I'm a Vegas Raider. I'm a UCLA football. I watch every game. You know what I mean? I play Madden. But his whole thing was,
Madden is sneakily a great coaching tool for people who've never played, by the way.
It is. And he wanted me to join his staff because he wanted some of my soccer players to dual sport. It's a small school. And I'm a big believer in it because it's going to keep our programs alive. Came on football staff while coaching soccer, both in the fall. And then we're such a small school that depending on what kind of players we have, we're going to declare for state or not, just depending on the clientele. And we at this school had not declared for state since 2016, been five, 6 years maybe. And I'm at a senior project like benefit for St. Jude's or the Shriners or something. And my basketball coach comes to me and says, "Hey, heard you guys are going to state." I'm like, "What? Did not know that." I'm hearing from my basketball coach. Now, mind you, 90% of those football players are basketball players in the winter. And so it does take that into effect because the first weekend of NorCal is the weekend of our big basketball tournament that's been going on for 70 some odd years. And so we declared, and I made a decision that we were going to let the football players play both. So they were going to play basketball and play football and try to keep under that 18 hours that the section, that the CIF wants for practice and game times in a week. And to be completely honest, we went over about a half hour on that week. It was 18 hours and 15 minutes or something like that. But people were knocking at my door, literally in town. "What are you doing? These kids are going to get hurt." And my mentality was, these kids are going to get hurt because you keep talking about it. And Scott Johnson, shout out to Scott Johnson, when he was urging me to declare to play in the state playoffs, he's, "Hey, man, if you guys go out and do it, it just makes your school year that much better." And so I decided to throw on a basketball tournament while in our backyard. We hosted the NorCal game against LeGrand High School. And I'm like, "All right, cool, man. They're probably the same size. They're about 600 kids, man. And they travel well." And like I said, man, that was a success. We ended up that night, we ended up winning the NorCal championship. And then those boys came in and played the tournament championship game. And we're up by 15 going into halftime, about to pull off a miracle of winning a NorCal and winning their home tournament. We ended up losing by 10, man, because you could tell right around like the end of the third quarter, that energy from the just it ran out. How hard is it to play two games? Ask Deion Sanders, ask Bo Jackson. It's tough. That was a success. And when we made it to state, I made the call of, "Hey, these boys are just going to play football this week. We're not going to do it." And on the failure side, trying to, for equity's sake, trying to create a girls tournament, because the boys had a tournament for so long. And I had the work done. I spent a year on it. And then my admin came back and just on one fell swoop, took it all away. She said, "We couldn't do it." And I asked why. And it was, "Oh, it's too much work for too many people." And I'm like, if you have one person willing to do all the work and has friends is willing to help them. I had gotten seven teams to come to this little podunk town in Northern California to come out and play basketball for the girls and make it. We announced it at the elementary school, and all these girls were excited, and then just got taken away. And it's just, you know, again, that's a failure that I'm willing to admit, because, you know, I'll take the accountability for it, because maybe it wasn't one of those things that was. One of the things you'll experience up here, man, is that the equity is like, what do you call it? It's almost like a choice. And if you're trying to do something that's never been done, people are like, "What are you doing?" That by far is probably like, and I know it wasn't any fault of my own. I think it was too big of an idea, and people didn't want to get behind it, even though I did have people behind it. Just a struggle.
On that note, I think the lesson there that I take away and I learned in my first year as the AD, which is, take assessment. What's going on? Does this fit? Is it mission appropriate? We tried to add a boys volleyball and add wrestling, and it just wasn't sustainable. And it's just take a swing and I'm going to miss. Yeah. And it didn't work out. But now I have evidence to point to, hey, we tried that. Here's why it didn't work out. Until the conditions are right, like, we're not doing it again. The question is, how do you repackage that if that's something that you're committed to in a way that it is embraced, or an equivalency that allows them to have their moment too? Maybe it's not a tournament, right? Maybe they're going away to travel. Who knows? But I think in your life, especially, it's like, it's just another speed bump, man. Like, you'll figure that one out. No problem. I want to know what you learned coaching youth sports that translated over to this role.
The connections with the kids, man. These little 6, 7, 8 year olds buy into what you're selling. It's fun. The thing about soccer, man, is that I love soccer. And what I teach is not just the game, it's the love of the game too. And what it provides for you, that translated over quite well. Just being myself and the love for the game that my dad taught me, explaining that to the kids. My daughter was one of those kids. And then just bringing it over into the coaching realm. I think every kid that I coach knows that I'm guided by my father. He's no longer here. He hasn't been here. It was 9 years since he passed away. But a lot of the principles that like I follow right now is essentially that, is just the words of wisdom. he always believed that I get to this point because these were dreams that I had when I was a kid. I've known I wanted to be a teacher for a long time. I know that I wanted to be in athletics for a long time. And he told me a long time ago, this game has a way of taking away and giving back. And I think he knew. The only thing, the only regret I have is that he's not here to see it. You know what I mean? But, you know, youth sports, it's those same connections, man. You just get them a little bit earlier. And then when it comes to high school athletics, all these kids are a little different, but they all were those same little 6-7-year-olds that were once upon a time. They have a love for the game. Somebody taught them to be there and to work. And you're passing on those same principles that my father passed down to me, man. So I just think that you make those connections early on, or you make them in high school. They're the same connections that you're trying to make. You just got to dig deep.
Yeah. On that note, when you think about the ways in which you can connect with kids, both as youth, as middle school kids, as high school kids, as college kids, you've been in every realm. The relationship piece is the theme that always comes up on the show. So I'm gonna leave that be for the time being, but I want to pivot that into how you're now utilizing your ability to build relationship with kids, to how are you now doing that with adults, both positives and negatives, right? Because it's a challenge just like it is with kids. And what I'm getting at here, right, is you navigate the adult politics of the role, right?
Yeah.
And the things that you're trying to do to keep the students at the center of the equation. What are some of the things that you have found that work and that don't work that you were able to pick up through adult relationships, say at the last conference you went to, or this one, where it's like, hey, this is great. I went and heard this. Let's come back and do it. Implosion, right? Versus, yeah, that's not going to work here, right? Talk a little bit about how your ability to nurture relationships with kids, you've leaned on that as you start building these adult networks now.
So one of the best things I do personally as the head varsity soccer coach is the very first thing I tell these kids is we, from the minute we get to conditioning camp, we're a family. It's a family atmosphere. I want you guys to have each other's backs. I want you guys to follow each other, guys around. We're together for the next 3.5, maybe 4 months. And, you know, that translates well in soccer for some reason. I came into essentially my alma mater and we won the most games we've won since I was a player here 20 years ago. I have a gear. I'm very passionate about the things that I do. Work hard, work harder, keep working. That message does not translate well to parents. It does not. And it comes in the manner of formal complaints. It comes in the matter of, I don't like how you're speaking to my kid. I don't like how you're doing this. And that's that implosion that you're talking about, because me, the messages remain the same for a really long time, whether it was coaching my daughter back in youth soccer, whether it was coaching at Enterprise as a JV girls coach, whether it was a track coach. You got to work hard for that glory that you want. And I tell my daughter this all the time. If you want to be the best out there on the court, you're going to sacrifice time with your friends. You got to sacrifice time with this. And it's crazy because as a teacher, educator, athletic director, my goal is to breed productive human beings that are able to function, because educational athletics provides that, man. It provides those lessons, those connections in the classroom that I make translate out to the athletic field. But yet you have a group of parents, and I think it's where we're at now as like a society in educational athletics. I think parents don't want to tell their kids to work harder. I think parents, for the majority, want to have things given to their kids. And I'll take you back to a story of coaching my daughter. That very first year, I had a parent bring trophies for everybody at the end of God bless her, man.
I already know where this is going, but continue with the story.
She was, out of the kindness of her heart, she was just trying to recognize everybody, but she didn't ask me until she had the box of trophies in her hand at the little party after the season. I don't subscribe to that. And that our society doesn't subscribe to that, man. We can pinpoint what the problem is, where a lot of parents are enabling their kids, thinking that if they just have the jersey, they've already earned the spot. And that's not what it is. And sometimes the relationships you build with kids, it doesn't translate to the adult. But what's weird is that in my little realm of soccer, it's worked. That family aspect, that work harder, that we need a condition because I need you guys to play for 80 minutes. I had a kid miss a penalty shot, shootouts. We do it differently up here. We don't end games and ties in our section for fall soccer. We go to penalty kicks at the end of regulation. And proud to say that was my idea, because we're the only sport up here that ends in a tie. And we changed that 2 years ago, and we went tied into the first set. Everybody hit their 5 PKs, so we had to go to the second set of shooters. And one of my kids misses to lose the game, right? And she's crying. It's co-ed up here too, by the way. She's crying. She's wondering why I put her in that spot. And I went out there, man, and I hugged her. And I told her I would put you in this spot again. Like, I not a second thought in my head that I would ever put you in this spot again. What am I teaching her? What did I need to hug her? Yeah, absolutely. Because I've been that kid that's missed that penalty kick, man. That thing can haunt you for the rest of your life. And yet, when I try to bring that same energy to basketball, to football, you have this group of parents that's like, I don't like how you talk to my kid like that. Your kid's missed practice the last 2 days and expects to start. Is it because he knows we only have 17 varsity players and 11 of them are going to play two ways? It's those relationships that, like, you wonder why you can connect with the kid, but you're not connecting with the adult. And see, the biggest mistake that we make, and it's not really a mistake, and it sounds bad, but we let them go home, right? I'm not privy to conversations at the dinner table or in the living room, man. You know what I mean? And I never intend to be.
I want to go in on that one because that might be one of the all-time great quotes. The biggest mistake we make is we let them go home. Now, I'm going to soften that up as a little bit experienced fella. And what Coach is getting at here is we only get kids for probably 2 hours a day max, right? As a coach, as a teacher, maybe 45 to 70 minutes, depending on the structure of your school. Yep. And ultimately, when you're trying to affect change, when you're trying to build teams, and you are doing that in your time, and they leave and they're getting other messages and outside noise, that you're not aware of what's being shared, it's hard to combat that. So that was the message. If you
that's
need
the
translation.
That's what I mean.
I'm gonna
rip the band-aid off, man.
Yeah, it's all good. All of that to get to this follow-up question. What have you figured out that works in your situation? Because it's not going away and you have to navigate it. And you use the example, like, we only have 17 and we need 11 to play, right? Smaller schools run into this, right? Where there's not a backup always nipping at your heels where you're forced to fight for your job every day. So what have you found that works that gets, I don't want to say buy-in, but it gets the kids to come alongside of the message that you're trying to teach, right? Versus being resistant because they know, hey, ain't nobody else here. I'm playing.
Yeah. So one of the cool things coming in here was that we had a brand new volleyball coach, Erin Sandage, and she, you know, she's doing her tryouts, and volleyball was one of those things that it's like a perennial sport here. It's a big one here. And she texts me, she's like, hey, what do you think about me cutting two seniors? I'm like, okay, no, sure. They're returning players. And I'm like, oh, like no spots guaranteed? No, no spots guaranteed. I was like, did you communicate that? Yeah, I did. I was like, cool, roll with it. Because we have to. The kids know, man. We don't give kids enough credit for knowing those kind of things because they know. They can count. When a coach is trying to build a program, man, if I had 22 soccer kids, I would keep them all just because it's easy, 11-on-11 scrimmages. But if a coach wants to do her evaluations, bring in different coaches and have an evaluation sheet, and she's bringing people that are knowledgeable to the game and also to her program, why wouldn't I support that? If we're teaching kids that no spot's guaranteed, that's real life skills, because no spot is guaranteed. So we've combated that a little bit. But also on the backside of that, if we're cutting kids, we got to tell them why. We got to show them that evaluation. We got to show. And it's one of those things that has worked for us. And it translated to basketball on the boys and the girls side. And for me, it's just tightening that up heading into year four as an athletic director and my second year at the school. But I think that's one of the big ones that'll help us.
What are some things going into year four that you have decided to let go? I'm not fighting this fight anymore, and it's not the hill I'm dying on. These are the things where I've decided I'm going to invest my energy, right? Now, that list always changes, but I think at this point, you start having a little bit of rhythm in the things that, you know what, I'm not spending any emotional energy on that anymore.
My message. You know, so you find that funny. There's people can't take the message sometimes. It's the delivery of the message, right? So it's, for me, it's, I'm passionate about things and it comes off the wrong way to people. But again, like, I went from a perennially big school, or not a big school, but Fall River, where in that year and a half, almost 2 years I was there as AD, we have 33 combined championships in a year and a half. And that's a testament to the kids in the community and building off a pedigree, but also buying into the same message. My message isn't going to be accepted by everybody. And so that's something going into year four where it's like, where can I change that delivery? It's always being reflective on what you do, whether it's in the classroom, whether it's in as a coach. My biggest failure as a coach was getting ejected from a game once. And that was because I missed the following game. And looking back on it, that was the last trip I would have ever taken with those girls at Enterprise. I didn't get to do that. So now is being more conscious about that. If I can be more conscious about the things I may say to an official as a coach, I could be conscious about the things that I say to parents and the delivery of the message that I'm trying to get. Screaming work harder isn't going to get across to everybody. Being passionate about things that I do isn't going to get across to everybody. So the delivery of that message, man, I used to, even a couple weeks ago, man, I'd die on that hill. But being reflective about it and being able to take feedback from my admin, from other coaches that have coached me, there's nothing wrong with shaping your message to your audience. And so that's one of the big things going into year four. I can deliver the same message a couple different ways.
And I think it's important to note that doesn't mean you're not being authentic. It means that who's your audience? And how are you crafting the message to that audience? Because ultimately, if the information is important, then it has to land.
It has to land, man. I call it my restaurant voice. How you folks doing today? What can I get you? Hey, you hear about our specials?
Talk about that. You said that waiting tables for 14 years has served you in this role. Talk a little bit about some specifics and some things that you wish everyone had waited tables because they would have this tool.
Talking to people, first and foremost. After a while waiting tables, I remember people would complain. I'd be like, hey, man, what can I do to get you to come back? Instead of, hey, can I offer you a free dessert for messing up your food, taking 45 minutes? Hey, I understand you're upset. What can I do to get you to not badmouth us when you leave this place? What can I get you to do to come back? Those are just people skills, man. And a lot of us, like I said, when I get to talking about something, I am so passionate about the things I do, whether it's my family, whether it's my current wife, whether it's just, I'm so excited about the things that I do that sometimes it's, man, that dude is so hyped. I wonder how he sleeps at night. The waiting tables, it's customers being mad, over-serving customers at the bar or anything like that. Like, you get to deal with different kinds of people from all walks of life. And I see some of those people and some of the parents I speak to, some of the families I speak to, the delivery of that message I was telling you about, you got to act on the fly and be able to multitask, which I think is very paramount to what we do. Those are the skills that I'm talking about, man. The ability to talk to people and shuffle a bunch of stuff in one arm and the other and be at three different places at once. Those are skills that are endless for me, man.
If you could offer one or two nuggets of wisdom that you have gleaned over your 4 years or that you picked up at a networking event or a conference or something that you think have been transformational for you, what would those be?
Always make it about the kids is one. If you're doing your job for accolades, like it's nice getting the accolades. I'm sure you felt great up there on your speech on Saturday, but I'm pretty sure I'd bet $100 that you were thinking about what Monday was going to bring at your school, what Tuesday was going to bring, what you had planned for the next 6 months. But always putting those kids first is number one. And then your ability to work with others too and delegate. It's okay to say no to certain things, or it's okay to also delegate stuff to people that you trust. Surround yourself with people that you trust. My wife has been, and you shouted out your wife too, man. And I imagine that I do the same thing. Very supportive, very balance your home life too. It's hard in this gig. Especially, I'm teaching a couple periods a day. I like to be involved in everything. My wife, we just welcomed a six-month-old. He's 6 months now, but I was at, number five, our first boy, and he's trying to start a basketball team. But let me put you this way. Find that person that supports you. You probably know better than anybody, but we were back from the hospital because we had to go 2.5 hours away from here to have the baby. So we had to come back, and there was a soccer game that day. And there was actually two soccer games that day. Didn't make it back in time for that first one. But I was casually telling her, hey, what do you think? What do you think's going on at the game? She's like, dude, just go. Just go. So there I go. And we're not even home with the baby for an hour. And she's encouraging me to go, man. Those are things that are like timeless, man. And that's finding your support person, surrounding yourself with supportive people. Can't stress that enough.
Let me piggyback on that one there, coach. So those of you that are listening, that's never a good idea When my son was born, our third child, he was a little bit early. He wasn't 12 weeks early like yours. He was a couple weeks and maybe three and had to stay in the hospital that night. My wife was knocked out of sleep and he was asleep and my mother-in-law was there and it was like, I was just going to sit there and do nothing. So I was like, yo, I'm going to go to practice and I'll be back. I haven't lived that one down and that was 14 years ago. So those of you that are listening, that's not a great plan and you're going to hear about it no matter what you think, just FYI. All right, let's wrap this thing up. And what I'm always curious about is things that people are doing from a growth mindset, right? So what have you changed your mind on lately? I used to be dug in over here and now I'm here and here's why. Because I think what we've learned with this generation is, and it should have been with ours as well, but the why is important, right? If people know why, they're generally going to work harder. They're generally going to be more committed. And the dictatorial approach that we grew up with, which wasn't necessarily like over the top, but it was like, yo, you're going to do this because I'm in charge, right? And so ultimately, the why you changed your mind, I'm way more curious about than what you actually changed your mind about.
You got to adapt, man. It's okay to be wrong. I just like in the classroom, I'm not going to be stuck in my ways. This year in the classroom, as a matter of fact, I did so many different things that I've never done before as a teacher. And I don't want to be the same teacher I am 20 years from now today. You know what I mean? I want to be better. And so that's the why. That's my why. And that goes into coaching. That goes into being an AD. I have goals, like personal goals, but at the same time, man, those are all achievable by adapting and evolving. And for me, it's you've said it already about I'm going to die on this hill. I call those non-negotiables. Sometimes, man, those non-negotiables can become negotiable. And you find that the balance at home is a little bit better. I'm not willing to die on previous hills because it's a better balance at home. It's a better balance from a personal health standpoint. And those are things I didn't subscribe to my first 3 years, man. I was off and running, bro. I was at everything. I was at every game. I was at every, and to some extent I still am, but I would rather be that. If you can't find anybody else, I'm right here. My track coach, I need a driver on Friday. And I'm like, cool. Thank you for thinking of me, but try that driver's list first. And then if you cannot find nobody, I'm your guy. And before it was like, I'm at the front of the line to be that guy. And now I think it'll give me some sort of LeBron-esque extension into my career, doing things at 48 that couldn't imagine doing at 38. It's just, that's my why.
Oh, and that, those of you listening, that's a great point, is how do you learn to say no when you said that earlier, right? And I think one of the things that becomes overwhelming in this role at times is if you don't have systems set up for yourself to deal with, I don't know, say email or like your point, drivers. It's, hey, I got to go do this. And I'm talking to my assistant the other day and it's, no, dude, you're not going to go do that. Let's talk through the different solutions. And if we land back to where that's what we're going to do, great, but let's not default to, I have to do it.
Yep.
Yeah. I think for those of you that are listening, we talked about this off recording, but when your closest league game is an hour and a half and the average is three, you're dealing with a whole different set of issues. So God bless you.
Thank you, man.
Coach, I lied. I have one more question. You mentioned your school has 229 kids. You play 11-man football. You have soccer in the fall. And I'm curious, and I know you said that's co-ed, but I'm curious how you can sustain an 11-man football program with that few students.
We encourage kids to dual sport. And one of the things that we've started is conditioning together. So we'll invite football players to my conditioning camp. It starts a little early for soccer. No contact, nothing. We're just conditioning. So what we're doing, we're out there a couple hours, whether we're in the strength and conditioning center or we're running around town doing sprints, stuff like that. And then some of these kids decide that they want a dual sport. So we sit down with parents, coaches of either sport. In this particular case, me with the football coach, and whether it's JV or varsity, and we map out these schedules for these kids where they're, and like I said, I typically take the hit, and I'd probably do it even if I wasn't the AD. And that's, I'll keep them from about 35, 40 minutes at my practice. And then I send them out and they'll be in practice in their helmet and their pads. They'll be doing some soccer stuff. And then we're right next door. So they run over to the football field and finish off with football for about an hour and 45 minutes. And so
Talk about what you mentioned, the dual sport agreement, because I think that's the challenge, especially when you're dealing with two team sports, right? I got kids that moonlight as track athletes that play lacrosse, right? Or jump in a pool and swim while they're playing softball. But like to play two team sports, that is a challenge that most people haven't hacked.
I encourage the kids, listen, your real life skills. A lot of you are going to go into the real world and maybe have a couple jobs and are trying to go to school. You might have a kid, this and that. So when we're doing this agreement, is the thing that we say is essentially you are committing to two teams. Okay. And we're going to map out your time to go to practices evenly so you can earn your spot evenly. And it's an agreement with parents, with me as the AD, me as the coach, head coach of football. And we do this. And one of the biggest things that the kids have to realize is that they got to keep their grades up. Because if their grades start slipping and missing assignments come through and all this stuff, then we force them to make a choice. It hasn't happened to me yet. I've been doing this at two different schools for the past couple of years, but that agreement puts everything on paper. So if a coach is feeling shortchanged, hey man, you signed on the dotted line. You agreed to the schedule. You're not pressuring the kid to do one or the other. And over 2 years, 3 years almost, in two different schools, it's gone pretty well. We all realize that we have to sustain. And if you want to look at it, we have 29 kids signed up for JV and 27 signed up for varsity for football heading into next year. It's just, you're giving kids.
For those of you that want the math on that, if we assume your school is basically balanced co-ed and the majority of those are males, then that's 20% of your population or more that are playing football.
Yeah. And so it works out. And we've had some wrestlers, my old school, we had some wrestlers that played basketball and played both. And we have track stars this spring that do baseball and softball and do golf. I have a kid doing track, softball, and golf right now. And if you look at the grades, and that's basically what it boils down to, man. There are some highly functioning kids out there that are willing to put themselves out there.
Yeah, no, that's wild. And I appreciate you sharing that because often that dilemma escapes finding creative solutions. So I appreciate you sharing that. And those of you that are listening,
one of the biggest things I want to share, that somebody's always going to end up, they feel like they got the short end of the stick, but we could put the pride aside for the kids. Like I told you, we always do it for the kids. It's magic. Going back to that state championship football game, I had three or four soccer players on that state championship football game, the football team that played soccer for me. And at the beginning of the year, we had 12 kids on that varsity team that ended up winning the state championship later on that year, just to give you an example of what that did for us and moving forward and stuff like that. It's just something that works. So just don't be afraid to throw yourself out there and set your pride aside.
Yeah. And call people and figure out creative solutions because they're out there.
Yeah.
All right. So signing off again, coach, thanks. Looking forward to seeing you at next year's conference.
Yes, sir.
This episode is brought to you by Element, spelled L-M-N-T. What is Element? It's a delicious sugar-free electrolyte drink mix. As a coach, we are constantly trying to find the best products for our athletes to train and compete at their highest level. Element is a great alternative to other commercial recovery and performance drinks and has enough sodium, potassium, and magnesium to get you feeling and performing your best. Plus, it has zero sugar, no artificial ingredients, and is gluten-free. With 8 delicious flavors, you're guaranteed to find one your taste buds will love. I know our athletes love the citrus salt. We keep a variety box in the office and our athletes stop by every day on their way to practice and games to load up. At this point, they won't even touch another electrolyte product. Without amazing products and sponsors like Element, our podcast would not be possible. Right now, when you click on our affiliate link and place your first Element order, Element will give us 100% commission. Last thing, Element might have the best return policy on the planet. If you don't love it, you'll be instantly refunded.